I found this poem coming to mind. So this is a Derek Walcott poem, late great Derek, called Earth. Let the day grow on you upwards through your feet. Those vegetal knuckles to your knees a stone. So by evening you are a black tree. And with evening feel the swift kick in your hair. And the full moon rise from your forehead. And the moon lit. Veins of silver run from your armpits like rivulets under dry leaves. Sleep as ants cross your eyelids. You have never possessed anything as deeply as this. This is all you have ever owned, from the first outcry through forever. You can never be dispossessed. Take one or two deeper breaths in through your nose and out through your mouth. You might want to make a bit of sound on the out breath. Just settle down into the cradle of the pelvis. Drop down. Night. Darkening above your head, the moist, deep earth below you. One way of understanding the posture in meditation is that we're creating a connection between earth and heaven. Quite a traditional way of understanding the meditative posture. So releasing the skull quickly, led by the crown, releasing the head upwards. Allowing it to find its natural poise on top of the spine. I like to imagine the base of the skull just moving away from the spine a little bit at the back there. So the chin is slightly dropped. So the crown is a little bit further back than we tend to imagine. Quite often people have the sort of forehead high, crown a little bit further back. When you can imagine the night sky, the darkening sky above your head, you can see if there's any response in your scalp. Think of the skull cap as a sort of inverted bowl. If you'd like to, they do this, don't they? Tibet, maybe skull caps, if they put a silver lining on them sometimes. But you might like to imagine inside of your skull, silvered. You can imagine your pelvis as another bowl facing upwards towards the bowl of the skull, silvered. But this spine, joining like a ladder, the pelvis to the skull. And let's imagine the spine as it is. It's not really hard bone. When we see bones outside the body, dried bones are kind of hard and gristle, aren't they? But in the body, they're still moist and alive. And the spine's made up, of course, of soft tissue, bone, bone marrow, nerves. Perhaps most importantly, kind of electricity. You can imagine your spine starts off in the lumbar region, doesn't it? A bit nearer the back of the body and then gracefully curves more into the core of the body. And rises up, kind of center of you, a bit like a tree. When we breathe in and out, because the diaphragm is anchored onto the spine, with a slight movement in the spine, kind of gentle wavering in the stream of the breath. We sometimes talk about sitting straight, but actually we sit. The posture is always dynamic, there's all these micro adjustments going on all the time. This is why we want to loosen the body to allow it to adjust naturally. This can't be done consciously with adjustment. We can consciously soften and relax so the body can make these adjustments as it comes into alignment with gravity. Dropping the pelvis and the out-breath there, releasing the legs, tickling the hips, the upper thighs, and the buttocks there. Let them go. We allow the lower body to find its ground in the earth. We allow the skull to find its earth, or its ground rather, in the sky. Curvature of the skull meeting the curvature of the night sky above you. Nice softening, softening space. and darling face of yours, just let it relax. You don't have to put on a meditation face. See if you can find the breath right down at the root. Sometimes call this the pelvic diaphragm. A little bit of movement around the muscles around the anus, the perineum, kind of breathing against the earth. I'd like to notice that the in-breath starts low down, way below the navel. Muscles just engaging down there before the in-breath is drawn down into the body. What keeps you alive, this breathing. It's what keeps you always intimate with the world outside and the world inside. What you have in common, all that lives, participation, breathing participation in the world of life. We'll just sit together for a little while. Let the day grow on you upwards through your feet. Those vegetal knuckles. Your knees are stone. So by evening you are a black tree. And with evening feel the swift thicken your hair. And the full moon rise from your forehead. And the moonlit veins of silver run from your armpits like rivulets under dry leaves. Sleep as ants cross your eyelids. You have never possessed anything as deeply as this. This is all you have ever owned, from the first outcry through forever. You can never be dispossessed. Maybe just noticing what you're doing. If you can do a bit less. What's left when you stop? Stop all after scheming, thinking. What's left?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Seems to have come back.
Great.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Well, it's a bit of a shame, but that's quite fun. I couldn't hear anyone. Anyway, good. No, that's good. Good.
Great. So, yeah, we've got an open space now. If anyone wants to share anything around their practice, either from that practice, other practices we've done today or on retreat, or what's been going on at home in your regular practice. And if you don't feel comfortable saying it out into the group, you can always post it privately in the chat, and Pranjanita will read it out, and then we can otherwise just unmute yourself and go for it. And if someone's talking, you know you want to do it, you could just put in the chat or wave your hand so we know that you want to do something afterwards. And I can't believe no one's got anything. Certainly in my group, there's loads of stuff that we're talking about.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, it's Suze here.
Hi, Suze.
I had an experience this morning and I just wanted to share it and maybe have your comments on it, if you have any. I must have gone quite deep into the meditation this morning, and when it finished, I didn't feel I was ready to come out of it, but I did. And immediately I put down the computer, I got up, I felt normal, and then I went into the bedroom, and immediately I felt my whole being pushing me to go to bed, so just lie down on the bed. And I got the impression that I was tired, but I laid there and I thought, am I tired? And I wasn't tired, but I had to, my whole being was telling me to lie down in the quiet and not move, not make a noise. And it's not something that's happened to me before. And I found it quite interesting. I kind of went with the flow of it, but it literally felt as if I kind of didn't have a lot of control over it, but it was quite strong. And I just wondered what your thoughts. I wondered whether it was the fact that I should have stayed in meditation longer. I shouldn't have come out of it. But I just wondered what your thoughts was. Thank you.
Was that after the early morning one we talked about?
That was after the Bodhi Leela. She did one at 8 o'clock this morning. It was that one.
Yeah. And you felt you went... What did you feel? What was your experience of the meditation?
I think I felt as if I was quite deep in the meditation, and I remember when the bells were being rung that I felt a resistance to come out of it. I thought, I'm not ready, but I kind of just went with the flow and came out of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounded like you just needed more time to integrate what was going on, you know, but allowed to sort of absorb more, you know. So I would, probably, well, I'm not saying you should have stayed meditating, probably laying down is good, really, you know. I think this is the thing about experiences, really. You know, they take, we have a, things happen to us, but, you know, they kind of become experienced through a kind of reflective process in a way, in the sense that they become more embodied, you know. So, you know, I think for that, you know, resting off, if you can do that, you know, if you have a strong meditation and just give yourself some time to more fully absorb it, I think it's very good.
Okay.
So positive thing. Yeah, it's a positive thing.
Okay.
And I think it's positive that you listened to your body and what you needed. You know, your mind, you were listening to that whole thing, that there was that wanting to lay down in bed, your whole being telling you to do that, and you listened to your whole being. I suppose there's the other thing is that, you know, it sounded like you went quite deeply in your meditation, maybe into a different kind of a state, then it always takes time to sort of surface back into our everyday. That's why transitions are really helpful, the beginning, end of meditations. But also that in a way you could choose not to end the meditation if you're in that state, even if you hear the three bells and even if everybody else is ending it. And yeah, so there's something about taking responsibility and ownership over our practice, you know, generally, but also over individual sits. Yeah. You know, if somebody's needing a meditation, you can tune in that completely and just do whatever feels right for you. You know, you don't have to go along with what the teacher's saying at all, only if it's helpful, really. And I think that requires a bit of trust and a bit of confidence in ourselves as meditators.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think I do kind of go along with the flow, and I'm kind of learning to kind of be more intuitive of myself, really. But yeah, I think that was a clear example.
Well, it sounded like you did listen to what you needed to do, isn't it? Well, maybe you might have stayed there longer if you thought about it more, but certainly when you came out of it, you realised that what you needed to do was to do that laying down on the bed, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was the fact that it was so strong. That was the thing that I was, you know, because I thought my first reaction is, oh, I want to lie down because I'm tired. And then when I laid there, it was like, am I tired? No, I'm not tired. It sort of kind of bit confused me a bit, really.
Well, I think we often want to be able to be clear about what an experience is, and we don't always know what an experience is. So just allowing it to be whatever it is without necessarily knowing, I think, can be helpful. Yes, so that kind of does, in my group, there was quite a lot coming up about our view of ourselves as meditators, you know, and underlying that there was kind of seemed to be a view of what meditation is and what should be happening in the meditation and what we should be doing in our meditations. And if certain things aren't happening or certain things are happening, how quickly we can go to questioning or doubting ourselves as meditators. And I'm sure we weren't the only people who had that experience.
So I have a question from the chat.
Mm-hmm.
What causes me to have heat about 10 minutes into a meditation? It is always up till that point. I feel I'm not meditating.
Well, you've got any more detail about where the heat is or what the general body heat is in a particular place?
So I'm just waiting for more information.
And is it heat within the body, outside the body?
Whole body within, especially then hands.
Nice, isn't it? Symbolically, has a kind of strong connection between a hand and a heart. You know, it's hard to say, isn't it? What causes it, isn't it? I mean, I think that's a whole array of kind of physical phenomena that happen when we meditate. I mean, I don't know that I can ascribe a definite causality to it. I don't know if Buddha leaders have any ideas. I mean, is it a positive, does it feel pleasant or unpleasant? It's a trouble when you've been chatting.
Well, maybe there can be a bit more follow up in the chat to explain a bit more, but I guess I agree. I don't think we can say it's this or it's that, because it depends. It depends on the person, it depends on the particular sit and what is there. But I suppose, as a general thing, I think when we're meditating, we are meditating with our whole self, and that includes our energy and our energetic body. And I think quite often energy may be blocked, and when we're meditating we can free some of that energy even if we're not conscious of that, and then that can be experienced as heat. And in particularly, there's sort of like the energy meridians down the center of the spine, from the crown around the throat, the heart, the belly, all those that are sometimes called the chakras. There's sort of energy meridians, and there's secondary ones in the palms of the hands and the soles of the feet. So those are obvious places where one might be feeling heat once energy gets flowing. And then sometimes you can sort of feel it almost like an aura around you when you're meditating. But anyway, anything more in the chat around that, Panyanita? Can't hear you. Are you muted?
It says it's very, very pleasant, like a shift. And it happens every time. Normally, the person has a chronic fatigue.
That's very positive, then, doesn't it? I think that it is. Right, it's just the energy is clearing up a bit more in the body.
I mean, I often experience that myself, and it's, a little bit into the meditation, and it's if I'm a bit more scattered and whatever, then maybe I don't get to that place. But once I let myself get a bit more grounded and I'm sort of there, then I think that usually happens. And it's just a pleasant experience. Yeah. And I think just appreciate it, enjoy it. There's all these teachings you get describing different states and things in meditation. And actually, the descriptions never quite match my own ones, but there's things that we talk like pretty and sukha, and they're often translated as words like bliss and whatever, which rapture. Quite rapture and bliss and things like that. And I've never quite related to those words, but I do relate to sort of like pleasurable experiences and energy and things being released during meditation.
Can I just say thank you for all the practices over the last 2 days? I felt that they were, like the lady said before, they were very powerful, they were very connected, very deep. And usually in my meditations, I'll tell myself stories, I won't feel so connected, but every one you've both led us through, I've felt really a lovely, strong feeling of connection. And yesterday with the drums, I really felt like I didn't want to let go of the drum, and I didn't want the drum to let go of me. It was like a heartbeat, and it was, I thought it was like being in the womb, because it was imagined like a child in the womb would feel that, it would feel that closeness to the mum. And I didn't really want to let that beat go. There was a high note and there was a low note, and that low note was really, really, really so beautiful, so wonderful, transported me. And the body scan today, Bodhimila, was absolutely wonderful. It was, I just wanted to, I haven't got a question, but I just say, you know, it's really moved me the last 2 days with the practices. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Thelma. Thank you. And well, it's always very nice to hear, isn't it, that what you're doing is having a positive effect, or you're creating conditions that people are responding to. And of course, different people will respond to different things, or find different things helpful, or different teachers helpful. But I think both Paramananda are very much into sort of trying to be in your body, trying to be in your experience. And it sounds like you had that response. So that's good to hear, Thelma. Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, there's just one thing I wanted to mention, because it did come up in our group about maybe it feels a bit difficult meditating in front of a screen. So when we're doing the meditations, do feel free to just switch off the screen and go to wherever you normally meditate, and not feel that you have to be connected to this online space while you're actually doing your meditation. Now, some people are sitting somewhere with the screen in front of them, that's fine, but if that doesn't work for you, do feel free to do that.
I have a question. It's Marlene. I think my question is about trusting your own practice. When I started meditating quite a few years ago, I was quite religious about alternating the mindfulness of breathing and the metta bhavana. I did, when I finally managed to establish a regular practice, I did the metta bhavana one day and the mindfulness of breathing the other day. But it's been quite a while now, and I've completely abandoned the formal practices. And I think what I do basically is just sitting. But I think there's a view that I should, particularly the metta bhavana, I should do it. Basically, I should do it. And I think I'm being lazy because I feel a strong resistance to doing it. And I label that as laziness. So I wonder if you could say something about that.
Can I take this one first? So I think, well, it's interesting, you have that resistance and you're calling it laziness. And there's that view that you should be doing that because that's what you told you should be doing. But when you're doing it, just sitting, whatever practice, is there any metta present?
Sometimes, yeah.
And what do you think of as metta being? Because if it's that sense of just being there, allowing, accepting, being open, seeing that kind of befriending yourself, that connectedness to other people, I think we can have a particular view, perhaps from how we're taught the metta bhavana initially. And that's very much about trying to create metta or make metta happen, or how we are, you know. And actually, if we look at what's underneath that practice, this is all about, I suppose, connecting with metta that's within us or outside. And it's also about working with ill will and hatred and transforming those. But it doesn't have to be in the context of the five-stage metta bhavana. You know, we can bring metta into a body scan. You know, we can bring metta into mindfulness of breathing. We can bring metta into just sitting. And it doesn't even have to be consciously trying to. There's a sort of receptive aspect of metta as well as a active. And I think if you have been doing a lot of practice in the past, then presumably there's some stuff that you'll have absorbed around being mindful and around metta that you can then bring into your practice when you've let go of the formal structures and how it is. I mean, I think that idea of rigidly alternating one practice and the other, one practice and the other, I think the reason is because I think they're both valuable, and sometimes people might have a preference for one or the other and then just do one and never do the metta, or love the metta and never do mindfulness, and actually both are beneficial practices to do. But I think it can be a little, it's a little bit literal to sort of say you have to do one and then the other, one and then the other. Because actually, there may be a time when actually you just need to do loads and loads of mindfulness practice, or there's another time when you might be feeling more and more drawn to doing metta practice. And I think you need to actually listen to what you need, and also, find your own ways into them sometimes. I don't know, that's just initial thoughts. Paramananda, what do you reckon? Meditator's question time, yes.
I mean, I agree with what Bernadette said, but I mean, one thing I might add to that is I think one of the major shifts we can make as meditators is to start imagining the heart as a center of our kind of body. If you think of the body as a mandala, the heart's in the middle. And it's more of a geographical shift that I think most people imagine themselves meditating from the head. But this is quite a modern conceit. I think in most indigenous cultures, they have a much more imagined, they're sort of imaginative faculty is actually experiencing a heart. And I think one of the things you can do as a meditator, if you can move the center down from the head to the heart, which is completely supported by the mindfulness of breathing, because of course the heart is the lungs are sentinel on either side of the heart. So if you're actually aware of the physical experience of breathing, you're automatically taken to the heart center. And of course, if you're meditating from the heart center, in a way, those two practices begin to integrate quite naturally. And so, I would be a little bit cautious, how long did you say you've been meditating?
For about 12 years.
Yeah, well, maybe. Although I'm certainly not in favour of people slavishly sticking to techniques or alternating or things like that, I'm also slightly cautious about, I suppose the question is what's going on when you're meditating, I mean, that's the only way you can judge whether the practice, what's actually going on when you're meditating. And of course, if there's a kind of absorption going on and a connection, a deepening kind of intimacy with yourself, well, that's absolutely fine. You don't need a practice. But if you're just sort of sitting there thinking about stuff, well, that's not so great. So you've got, in a way, you have to judge it by what's going on. What's your experience of meditating? So I'm assuming that just sitting gives you a satisfying and qualitative experience of meditating. If that's the case, well, yeah, it's fine, isn't it? But actually, some people, I think, do sit there and basically, just thinking, and that isn't meditating. Might or might not be pleasurable, depending about what you're thinking about. Some people have an amazing faculty just to slip into kind of fantasy. and they can sit there having a lovely fantasy, but that isn't meditating, sitting there having a lovely fantasy. So it kind of depends, as I say. You can't answer that question really without, you know, you're the only one that can answer whether it, which is of course what Bodhidharma was saying. You know, you've got to make those judgments yourself.
Yeah, I think I'm not sort of suggesting that we all just drop all the form. You know, there's reasons why the mindfulness of breathing that we teach is in that particular form, or why the metta bhavana has the five stages in those particular stages, you know, and there's benefits to those. It's when we kind of get literal or slavish or in a habit around them that kind of gets in the way of us going deeper with them or exploring them. But there's something about knowing ourselves, knowing our habits, knowing our whole approach to meditation, because it's very easy to justify not doing what we don't want to do and going with our preferences by saying, oh, I'm just following my intuition, when it's probably just that you don't particularly want to do something, or there's something else you want to do. Yeah, so something about having form and structure that actually get you to do things that you don't particularly want to do naturally can be really useful. And I think, yeah, if you go back to that story of the Buddha, you know, he spent years and years doing certain things, some of them pleasant, some of them probably not so pleasant, before he let go of them, you know, and it was with that informing him that he was able to then do something different. So I think we can prematurely let go of the forms and the structures. And for me, I go and revisit them from time to time as well, even though, you know, at the moment I'm doing a lot more, I suppose, similar to you, sitting with my experience turning towards it. But again, it's like the flavour you bring to it. You know, now I'm looking at it with more of a sort of like insight approach, but also a heart approach, but in a more passive, receptive way. It's like the more I practice, the less I know and the less I do, kind of thing. And yet there's something that is taking me deeper in that process. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I'm aware that, Pat, you've had your hand up for a while. Is there something you wanted to say?
Yeah, thank you. I was just going to say that I have a much more frequent and stronger feelings of connectivity, connection with what's outside of me during meditation. And that seems to have increased since we've been using Zoom, strangely enough. I mean, I used to have that sense before, but it was very fleeting. It's much more stable now, that sense of being part of this amazing cosmos, this amazing place that we call Earth, and all the people and all the animals. And I just feel very, very strongly connected. Of course, it is a nice feeling. It's less strong when if I go to a discussion group and we start talking about something, it becomes that sense of, strangely, that sense of connectedness gets less, dissipates. So I'm not sure what the question is, really. it's a question of why it should be so that when I'm simply silently experiencing everything and everybody, that is such a strong sense of being connected. Do you want me to say something more?
I
No, I was just waiting for Bernie to talk, but I'll say something. I don't find it that surprising, really, to be honest with you. I think about my own experience, I think some of the strongest of that sort of feeling that I get if I'm on solitary retreat, you know. And I think maybe, I don't know if this has got anything necessary to resume, but I think that connection isn't an idea. Although I don't want to go into too much detail, but I do actually think it's something to do with the heart and the heart's sensitivity. And I think sometimes when we're with people, we're kind of kept on quite a superficial level. You know, you go to class and people are chatting and it's all very, you know, lovely and pleasant. But actually it can be quite superficial in a certain sort of way. And there might also, I suppose, be possibly, I don't know in your case, I think sometimes what practicing in a home can do, or practicing on your own, or practicing perhaps on Zoom, can let you relax a bit more, you know. You know, I think a lot of people are not really that comfortable a lot of the time, you know. And I think with meditation, I don't think we're both emphasizing it a lot, but I don't think you can't really overemphasize relaxing. You're relaxing within a structure and a form of the posture, but it's kind of allowing the kind of small sort of cognitive mind to calm down. It's so important for that sense of connection, you know. If we're kind of busy in the head, it just doesn't really happen, actually. You know, it doesn't really happen, you know, because we've only got quite a limited amount of awareness. And if we're thinking about things, you know, that heart awareness is just hidden, you know. So it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. And I don't try and hold on to it, but I would really encourage it, because I think I'm not gonna go into this here, I might say something about it, but it is a kind of a return into source. That connection is a return, you know. A return to something which I think is the basic longing, really. Our basic longing to belong, you know. And is that sort of connection you're describing there, really, that we're held by the, because we're part of the cosmos, we're held by the cosmos, you know. But it, you know, it is this, anyway, I leave that. So much could be said about it, but I'll leave it.
Yes, thank you. That's very helpful. That's certainly adds to what I've been feeling and experiencing. And I did learn meditating from or with the heart from Lama Shenpen. I was with her group in the Awakened Heart Sangha for quite a while. And of course she emphasized the centrality of the heart.
She's very hearty, yeah. 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 Oh, good. Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's bearing fruit, yeah.
And I'd also say there's something around insight in that. So sometimes we can have the idea that insight is sort of more like our cognitive mind seeing things as they are. But I think it's also about like our hearts receiving and the knowledge and that sense of interconnection. And I think when we're with other people, sometimes that reinforces our sense of ourselves as separate and our ego. you know, our ego clinging, and that gets in the way of that. So maybe that's what is happening for you as well, that in this context you can listen to the heart's wisdom. Yeah. Okay, so I'd like to end there because I would really like us to do a ritual. So we're going to end with a threefold puja, which is a simple set of verses connecting with inspiration, aspiration, Buddha, the Dharma, Sangha. You don't have to join in if you don't want to, but puja is a practice, just like meditation or mantra chanting is a practice. And it's very much about, I think, cultivating our spiritual receptivity and our commitment, our intentions, those underlying things that in a way motivate us to keep practicing, even when times get tough, that help us to sort of cultivate faith, maybe. Paramananda, are you up for call and response?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Are you here, Pranyanita, somewhere? I can't see you on my screen.
Here.
Okay. Do you fancy doing a mantra at the end?
Absolutely. Which one?
Ooh. Why don't you do the more melodic Amitabha one? Okay. All right. Okay, so, I thought just before we start, I'm going to do a reading from Einstein that kind of is a little bit inspired by what Pat was saying. It's Einstein on compassion. If I can find it. A human being is part of the whole, called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. Experiencing himself, his thoughts and feelings are separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in all its beauty. Nobody is able to achieve this completely, but the striving for such an achievement is in itself a part of the liberation and a foundation for inner security. Threefold puja, opening reverence. We reverence the Buddha.
We reverence the Buddha.
The perfectly enlightened one.
The perfectly enlightened one.
The shower of the way.
The shower of the way.
We reverence the Dharma.
We reverence the Dharma.
The teaching of the Buddha.
The teaching of the Buddha.
Which inspires and guides.
Which inspires and guides.
We reverence the Sangha.
We reverence the Sangha.
The fellowship of the Buddha's disciples.
The fellowship of the Buddha's disciples.
Reverence to the three jewels. We reverence the Buddha.
We reverence the Buddha.
And aspire to follow him.
And aspire to follow him.
The Buddha was born.
The Buddha was born.
As we are born.
As we are born.
What the Buddha overcame.
What the Buddha overcame.
We too can overcome.
We too can overcome.
What the Buddha attained.
What the Buddha attained.
We too can attain.
We too can attain.
We reverence the Dharma.
We reverence the Dharma.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
With body, speech, and mind until the end.
With body, speech, and mind until the end.
The truth in all its aspects.
The truth in all its aspects.
The path in all its stages.
The path in all its stages.
We aspire to study, practice, realize.
We aspire to study, practice, realize.
We reverence the Sangha.
We reverence the Sangha.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
As one by one we make our own commitment.
As one by one we make our own commitment.
An ever-widening circle, the Sangha grows.
An ever-widening circle, the Sangha grows.
And we'll do the refuges and precepts in call and response. Namo tassa.
Namo tassa.
Bhagavato arahato.
Bhagavato arahato.
Sammā sambuddhassa.
Sammā sambuddhassa.
Namo tassa.
Namo tassa.
Bhagavato arahato.
Bhagavato arahato.
Sammā sambuddhassa.
Sammā sambuddhassa.
Namo tassa.
Namo tassa.
Bhagavato arahato.
Bhagavato arahato.
Sammā sambuddhassa.
Sammā sambuddhassa.
Buddham saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Buddham saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dityampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dityampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dityampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dityampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dityampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dityampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Pāṇātipāṭhā.
Pāṇātipāṭhā.
Veeramani.
Veeramani.
Sikkhapadaṃ.
Sikkhapadaṃ.
Samādhiyāmi.
Samādhiyāmi.
Ādinadana.
Ādinadana.
Veeramani.
Ramani.
Sikapadam.
Sikapadam.
Samadhiyami.
Samadhiyami.
Kamesu.
Kamesu.
Nichachara.
Mechachara.
Veramani.
Veramani.
Sikapadam.
Sikapadam.
Samadhiyami.
Samadhiyami.
Musavada.
Musavada.
Veramani.
Veramani.
Sikapadam.
Sikapadam.
Samadhiyami.
Samadhiyami.
Suramariya.
Suramariya.
Macha.
Macha.
Amadatana.
Amadatana.
Veramani.
Veramani.
Sikapadam.
Sikapadam.
Samadhiyami.
Samadhiyami.
Sadhu.
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 With deeds of loving kindness.
With deeds of loving kindness.
I purify my body.
I purify my body.
With open-handed generosity.
With open-handed generosity.
I purify my body.
I purify my body.
With stillness.
With stillness.
Simplicity.
Simplicity.
And contentment.
And contentment.
I purify my body.
I purify my body.
With truthful communication.
With truthful communication.
I purify my speech.
I purify my speech.
With mindfulness clear and radiant.
With mindfulness clear and radiant.
I purify my mind.
I purify my mind.
Offerings to the Buddha. Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer flowers.
We offer flowers.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Reverencing the Buddha, we offer candles.
Reverencing the Buddha, we offer candles.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
From his greater lamp, a lesser lamp we light within us.
From his greater lamp, a lesser lamp, we light within us.
The lamp of Bodhi, shining within our hearts.
The lamp of Bodhi, shining within our hearts.
Reverencing the Buddha, we offer incense.
Reverencing the Buddha, we offer incense.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
Sweeter than incense.
Sweeter than incense.
Spreads in all directions throughout the world.
Spreads in all directions throughout the world.
Om Amideva Hri. 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 Om Amideva Hri.
So it's always good to allow ourselves time to sit or absorb after doing any kind of a ritual. This does mark the end of this session, so I invite you to do that. After we leave the Zoom, and hope to see you tomorrow. So 8 o'clock for morning meditation, 10:30 talk and practice led by Paramananda, and then another 4 o'clock session just like we've had today. So have a good evening and hope to see you tomorrow.